Jonathan, I want to thank you for this interview and hope you can stay for us to do a post-show interview. We'll post it at democracynow.org to talk about King's early years and the allies he was forced to sever ties with for a time, like Bayard Rustin. We're talking to Jonathan Eig, longtime journalist, author. His new biography is out, King, A Life. That does it for our show. Go to democracynow.org for all transcripts of show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Puberty is when you grow into your adult body, usually between 8 and 14 years old. All that growing brings changes that may make you feel scared, confused, excited, or all of the above. It's all good. You're just maturing. Puberty is a process that lasts years, hits differently for everybody, and can last till you're around 20. So how do the changes show up? You may get pimples, mostly on your face, but on your body too. Hair. The hair you have on your arms and legs may get thicker and darker, and you'll likely grow hair in new places, like your face, armpits, chest, and pubic area. Stretch marks are common too, a sign of your adult body taking shape. Physical changes, from body odor to growth spurts, are just part of the puberty story. All kinds of new feelings may come on too, like crushes and being sexually turned on. It's super common to feel like your emotions suddenly turn on and off, sad, angry, or irritated. No matter how you're feeling about all these changes to your body, remember that puberty is a normal part of growing up, and knowing what to expect can help to make it feel a lot less weird or stressful. Want to learn more? Go to PlannedParenthood.org/teens.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, operating at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM and over the internet at WUSB.FM. 6:01 on a Tuesday night, time for another edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you this evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, indeed, right here.
Do you have a pleasant Memorial Day?
Sure.
Are we supposed to have a pleasant Memorial Day? I mean, it's a sad holiday, but I don't know. It doesn't seem to stop anybody from having their sales and barbecues and fireworks and all that. It doesn't seem too somber to me.
Yeah, whenever I was asked about it, I said it was just going to be kind of low-key. I guess people have grand plans for these kinds of things. They're big family get-togethers, but, you know, people have differing definitions and ways of celebrating across families.
Right.
And some families don't feel the need to get together. They do share the sentiment, I think, though.
But and what's the sentiment exactly?
The somberness, the regret for
the bad decisions in your life, or
well, I was going to say the kind of fighting that I guess we're memorializing.
Well, I mean, we always do that. We always have holidays to memorial. And I'm not saying you shouldn't. Too many people die in wars and things like that. We have Veterans Day. We have Memorial Day. We have all kinds of other periods where we basically pay tribute. But we never have a holiday for civilians who are victimized in times of war, you know? And I think you should make room for that as well. I think we really should pay tribute to those people who didn't go into any conflict, but were victims of one all the same.
I heard something, a fact, I believe, or just a change that's happened as far as war casualties. I believe it might have been Democracy Now. I was listening to WSB Stony Brook, I believe, or other kind of public affair programming.
No, you do tend to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I tune into stuff. But, no, I think that modern casualties of war, it's like 90% of the casualties end up being civilian, whereas
is that true?
Way back when it was like 10% of the civilian, 10% of the casualties would have been civilian. If you think about like the red coats and the old school Civil War revolutionary, it's like war was very formalized. And actually, you know what? It was a history, American history. I think it was on C-SPAN.
You're saying 90% of casualties in war are civilians?
It's flipped. A lot more. Like in all of Iraq, Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. That's
we
true.
Know
That's
we true. Know that it was, and it was. It's sick to tally it this way, but it was closely tied to however many individuals were lost on September 11th in 2001, and it was. It rivaled that, then I believe it surpassed that. I don't know what the total war dead is. But when you talk civilians, and I know Democracy Now! Has covered this and many different programs and academics, people have looked at this, gathering information after that conflict, and a heck of a lot of people, I think a million in Iraq, died from shock and awe and, mm-hmm. you know, Tomahawk missiles.
No, we don't talk about that, and that's not who the holiday's for, Kyle. It's not for them. So, you see, this is my point. We never talk about this. We never talk about all the people. It doesn't have to be in a particular country. And Memorial Day, how about, hey, Memorial Day should be an international holiday, you know, for all soldiers, not just American soldiers. We should, as a planet, memorialize all the people who have died in war. I know some of those people will be people who are fighting against our soldiers. I know that, but in the end, their lives that were lost that were valuable, and we should learn from that. I think if we don't learn together, we'll never learn. You know, if we just keep having our own rival memorials for past battles, then we haven't really gotten past the battles. Actually, that's a good slogan, isn't it? Okay, anyway, moving on to things that are going on around here. Looks like Stony Brook University, that's the campus we're at. Yeah, that's where this radio station emanates from.
It's a learning institution.
Not transmitter emanates from Bald Hill, but you know what I mean. The studios and the programming and all the intelligence behind this place, Stony Brook University.
The inquisitive mind.
Okay, so anyway, I'm going to tell you what's happening at Stony Brook University. Stony Brook University will be used as a housing site for asylum seekers, according to a New York One report. And for those of you who want to know what the hell New York One is, that is a news channel, run by Spectrum in New York City, by the cable company there. It's kind of like News 12, except they actually have news.
Yeah.
No, that's a shot at News 12, because they've cut so much, and there's hardly anything on anymore.
In quite a contrast with Spectrum, they've got public affairs and political programming that's fantastic for, like, local city hall stuff in the
They
city.
Have Live with the Mayor. Of course,
Incredible
we don't
stuff.
Have a mayor, but we have lots of mayors, but we don't have... But the point is, they do a decent job. But anyway, yes, so they said that Stony Brook University will be used as a housing site for asylum seekers. I think
that's
great.
Exciting.
I think that's something that is appropriate, and I think it's something that... we need to educate ourselves on, because there's so just reaction that's filled with ignorance and suspicion and hatred. The report identified dorms on three SUNY campuses that will be used to house migrants. It says the plan includes a total of 1,500 beds at Stony Brook University, the University of Buffalo, and the University at Albany. Look, if the beds are there, use them. Use them. Seeking asylum is a right. It's not illegal. These people are not criminals. They are looking for a better life in much the same way that many of our ancestors did. We should be welcoming them. We should be helping them. We should be hoping that they win their battle and become citizens and become a valuable part of our society, because we sure do need the help. You know, all those places that have shut down, all the stores that are closing early, all the restaurants that are no longer open late, all of that can be helped by more of a workforce, by people who are willing to come in and work these jobs. And the eagerness, the spirit, I think is something we are in dire need of being inspired by. So the governor's office... what's funny is this is a News 12 story I'm reading, but they credited New York One with giving the details on what's going to be happening on Long Island. Yeah, that kind of proves my point. The governor's office tells News 12, because they made a phone call to the governor apparently, to the governor's office. Governor Hochul directed her administration to assess all possible state sites that could be used to provide shelter for asylum seekers. There are multiple sites under consideration, including SUNY and CUNY campuses at City University of New York. No final decisions have been made. Okay, enter Republican State Senator Anthony Palumbo. You ever hear that? We've never talked about him. We've never talked about him before, but he has been a presence. He is a state senator. He is a Republican. He represents the area. And until now, he hasn't really put his foot in his mouth too badly. You know, it's almost... I almost didn't know what party he represented. I'd seen occasional newsletters from him and press releases and things like that. And he wasn't like a Lee Zeldin. You know, he wasn't somebody who continually said horrible things and racist things and white supremacy and anti-Semitism and all that. No, he didn't do that. However, this past week, he said some things I think are worthy of note. Republican State Senator Anthony Palumbo, who represents Stony Brook, says he has gotten a ton of calls from constituents about the possibility of migrants coming to the university. He has not confirmed that they are coming to the school, but has concerns if they do. We don't even fingerprint or have any clue who these undocumented migrants are, Palumbo says. First of all, asylum seekers. Let's get the terminology right. These are people seeking asylum. Yet you're going to put them in a dorm or on the same campus as our children. No, thank you.
Oh, it's not the school year, right?
First of all, yeah, I mean, it's summer break. There are some students on campus, but nowhere near the same amount. And that's the reason why there is room, because the dorms aren't occupied, or the dorms that they're considering putting people in are not occupied. Second, you know, when I go to other places, other countries, I often stay in housing where I'm very nearby citizens of that country, and I don't really pick up on much of a concern that I haven't been fingerprinted or my background has not been checked, or, you know, they think that I'm somehow going to bring diseases or a crime or all sorts of horrible things to their pristine land. Yeah, I don't get that. You know, maybe that's the sentiment in the street. I don't think it is. And to talk about human beings in this way, to say they need to be fingerprinted, and these are families, these are children, these are people looking for a better life. That's all it is. Why are we making it into so much more than that? Why are we turning this into gang members are coming to attack your children? No, that is not what's happening. That is not. These are people that, first of all, they are in the system. That's how they're being housed. It's not just a crowd of people suddenly taking over a dormitory. These are people that are asylum seekers. They're in the system. This is where they're being housed. You know, and you're not mentioning, as Republicans never do, that the reason they're here is because they're being bussed by the governors of southern states. Somehow we don't talk about that anymore. But that's the reason they're in New York. It's not a democratically controlled problem. It's a problem that Republicans have brought to us. We can debate whether or not that was the right thing to do. I don't think it was. But we're past that now. We're past that point. So they're here, they're arriving, and we need to act like the people we purport to be and help. That's what our country was founded on. Anyway, we have a level-headed county executive, Steve Vallone, another person who does not put his political party on the press releases, or you can't tell sometimes if he's Republican or Democrat. He's a Democrat, okay? In this particular case, as opposed to the Republican Nassau County executive or the town supervisor of Riverhead, he said something that I think makes a lot more sense. He issued an emergency order on Friday that addressed the possibility that asylum seekers from New York City may be temporarily housed in the county. Address the issue. The order reiterates the county's stance that New York City, which has more than 42,000 migrants in its care, should not bus asylum seekers to random hotels across the state. All right. Instead, county officials say the state should coordinate the response and choose federal and state sites to place migrants. He's addressing the issue, addressing the concerns, but not saying, no, we're closing our borders to them. We don't want them here. He's saying we should go through a particular process. And that makes sense. That makes sense. You know, if it were me, I'd probably be more accommodating. But I think this addresses people's concerns and passes it on to the proper authorities. And hopefully things work out so that these people who are looking for a better life get a chance at it. And so that we don't come off as hate-filled racists that just, you know, want to keep people who don't quite look like us away. It's wrong. It's wrong. We say, you know, come to this country legally. That is exactly what they are doing. That is exactly what they are doing. They are seeking asylum. It's a legal process. All right. And if they come to Stony Brook, we should welcome them.
Easily.
Throw a big party or something. You know what? We should have like some kind of live broadcast from one of those dormitories. They pick the records. You know? Learn something about their culture. And
I'm sure the campus could facilitate activities like that and be a really fantastic, supportive host, whatever it may be, student organizations, maybe some outside groups that, you know, help administer and manage that influx during the period where they're going to be using the dormitories. But mm-hmm. It certainly isn't helpful. And like what I'm seeing in this is, you know, just stirring more up and making these people out to be something that they are not. And, you know, what I really don't like about it is just how mean-spirited and evil you make them out to be, like, as they're, you know, just an entire group of criminals and people that are to be afraid of when that's not the case. It's never good to generalize mm-hmm. like that. But that just perpetuates stereotypes and the kind of stuff that that leads to escalation. If you hear this from leadership, then when these people are trying to go about their lives, the laundromat, or do whatever, you know, they are able to as far as maybe employment or if they're even allowed to work or just sustaining themselves, you know, what kind of attitudes will they be met with if the leadership is suggesting that they are something they're not and that people ought to react accordingly? I mean, it's very, very I don't even know the word. It's so wrong to mischaracterize people. It leads to misinterpretations. People running around like vigilantes. We're already seeing that a whole lot of that.
Yeah, and you know, we've looked into the facts and figures and the numbers and all that. And as far as concern over crime, believe me, we have a much bigger problem with citizens and crime. You know, let's fix that before we act high and mighty about, oh my God, these people are going to commit crimes. I'm not sure why exactly they would do that, why that's necessarily where they're going to go. But I am concerned with the fact that there is so much that people are doing here that's violent, that's resulting from hatred and fear, that's resulting from being overarmed with all kinds of horrible weaponry. We have a lot of problems to fix, and they're not the problem. Okay, we talked about the State Board of Regents a few weeks ago voting unanimously to ban Native American team names, logos, and mascots at public schools throughout New York. Well, last Wednesday, work continued. I guess work continued on Thursday, too, on a student-designed mural on the wall of a bagel shop next to Massapequa High School that, guess what, depicts its mascot, a Native American chief. And it's backed by the school district. Folks, what are you doing? I mean, it was very simple, you know, very, very simple a ruling that came down that basically concluded that these images, these names aren't right. They're offensive. And there's something the Native American community does not appreciate. So, okay, I guess they're sidestepping it now, this mural. When completed, we'll include the mascot and its feathered headdress sandwiched between the words Massapequa and Chiefs, painted in blue and gold with sailboats and a lighthouse in the background. It's about halfway done. Now, Massapequa has not yet committed to retiring its Chiefs mascot, and district officials declined to comment when asked about the mural, but it will likely need to be replaced under the state ban. I just don't understand why they're making a new one if they know this is what's going to have to happen. Now, the district estimated the cost of covering it up would be about $3,000, which really isn't all that much.
The mural?
To cover it up. But then, yeah, I imagine it costs money to paint it, too.
So. Oh, I'm thinking free.
To cover it up?
Yeah.
You want to go down there and...
I just don't think it's going to cost that. It won't cost anything. Just let people know when you're done,
uh-huh.
and it'll be gone the next day.
That's a thought. That's an idea. On Wednesday, the district's website displayed a finished version and a message of support. For generations, the wall adjacent to Massapequa High School's main campus, which is off school property, has been the site of a student-designed, selected, and painted mural. Students building-wide have the opportunity to share their designs for consideration, which ultimately is narrowed down to finalists. The student body then votes for the winning design. Okay, in a statement, the State Education Department said it has not had any communication with the Massapequa Union Free School District regarding the mural. While the State Education Department is unaware of any specific information about the mural, it is SED's position that school districts should not be promoting soon-to-be-retired indigenous team names, logos, or mascots in any capacity, as they are also a violation of the Dignity for All Students Act. It's just crazy. I want to read a couple of comments here. This is from Lauren Rosen, a Roslyn native who lives in Queens. I don't know why they picked her. That's nowhere near Massapequa. She said she was not aware of the mural, but had no problem with the Native American imagery. Well, good. Lauren Rosen has no problem with the Native American imagery. Did you try asking a Native American? I mean, is she a Native American? You don't say in this story. And this is a Newsday story, by the way. Anyway, she would say, because we're going to hear from her as well, I would tell the district if they are celebrating different cultures, go for it. If it's artwork celebrating cultures in positive light, I don't feel the state would feel it's inappropriate. These days, everybody is so offended by everything and can't get out of anybody's way. You know, you might have found some Native Americans saying something similar a few hundred years ago, that these people just will not get out of our way. You know, this is something that is just so many levels of wrong. The owner of the Bagel Boss store, Jeff Grossfeld, said the students usually vote to paint the new mural every 3 years. I'm all for the chief head. I think in this town, and I've lived here my whole life, we use it out of respect. It's not derogatory. Once a chief, always a chief. I don't think it's something to throw egg in anyone's face. It's something as a community we believe in. Okay, but Jeff, you're not in the Native American community. You say it's not derogatory. I'm sure it's not derogatory to Jeff Grossfeld, but it might be derogatory. In fact, we have it on good authority it is, because they've said so, to Native American communities. So aren't they the ones that should have the say here? Shouldn't they at least be quoted in the damn article? You know, I'm looking through this article, and there's no quote from a Native American person.
The fact that we're covering it like this, like seeing all the districts on their back feet or digging in, is itself insulting to our intelligence. Collectively, our understanding of this country's history should make this a no-brainer. Why would we be fighting with these districts? Why would they be even writing stories like this? It's so backwards for this country. Like we have it so very wrong. I mean, it's not uncommon, though. I mean, indigenous communities relegated and pushed aside in many different countries around the world, in all kinds of states of development, sure. But here, I think we've got some good models. There's at least some atonement done up in Canada. There's a little bit more down here, but I don't understand why this is something to dig in on. Again, you have zero ownership over the indigenous iconography, right? I mean, if it was a religious symbol, mm-hmm. someone was like dragging your crucifix around behind their truck or something on the ground, you would have a problem with that. You know, if that was your icon,
I wouldn't be offended.
Well, fine. You know,
and if I say I'm not offended, they should do it.
Insert deity or your icon. I say iconography because that's a religious art form,
mm-hmm.
and in this sense, it's a profile or a could be a carving, woodblock, right? It's a silhouette, an image that depicts an icon or a type of style and cultural identity that the school and many of the people that are being quoted here really have no ownership of. And I think you spoke to that over and over again. Like, the fact that we have to even reiterate that is itself stupid. It's insulting. Like, they really are backwards in this, and the defense of it is indefensible. They have got to listen, and they're not. And it's just, I fear, a lot of history repeating. I mean, there are name changes happening at military bases all around this country.
Name changes are not a bad thing. It's part of progression.
Yeah, there are people. There are terms that are used for natural geographical phenomena that are changing as well,
mm-hmm.
because there were insensitive terms that were commonly used. Some of these things should be a serious priority, and they're easy. They're very simple.
And it's healthy, too. It's healthy to occasionally change things, because then you learn about the history. You adapt. You're not just doing the same thing because it's a habit.
Oh, that's the cruelest of irony in this, too, that these are learning institutions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great place.
What are they teaching the kids here?
They could really take this on. And exactly what instead have they decided to teach them?
All right. Well, let's hope that reason prevails at some point in Massapequa. I'd like to hear about that. Police in Berlin said on Friday they have opened an investigation of Roger Waters. Roger Waters from Pink Floyd. Yes, that one. On the suspicion of incitement over a costume the Pink Floyd co-founder wore when he performed in the German capital last week. Oh, my goodness. You know, I think he lives on Long Island, too.
I saw a picture of I think,
well, this
what
has
he was
been
wearing.
All over the news.
Yeah.
And I just, I mean, oh, it's no laughing matter, but all right, let's get into this. Images on social media showed Waters firing an imitation machine gun while dressed in a long black coat with a red armband. Police confirmed that an investigation was opened over suspicions that the context of the costume could constitute a glorification, justification, or approval of Nazi rule, and therefore a disturbance of the public peace. Once the police investigation is concluded, the case will be handed to Berlin prosecutors who would decide whether to pursue any charges. Okay, right away. I got to say something here. I was around when the Pink Floyd album The Wall came out. You probably heard it, Kyle. It's before your time, but I'm sure you've heard it. It's like Beethoven's Seventh.
To me, you're talking about a laser show, but yeah, go on.
Fine. Well, however it evolved in your life.
That's where I first saw The Wall, yeah.
What they are describing there is the last act of the show. Again, this came out in 1979. That's when the album came out. I've seen The Wall performed. Many people have. It's been performed many times. Roger Waters wrote the majority of it. And, okay, look, I'm gonna read you part of the synopsis of how that particular album ends. It's about a rock star named Pink. Get it? Pink Floyd. And basically he becomes a drug addict, has hallucinations, and part of those hallucinations on side four include an on-stage performance where he believes that he is a fascist dictator and that his concert is a neo-Nazi rally at which he sets brown shirt-like men on fans that he considers unworthy. He proceeds to attack ethnic minorities and then holds a rally in suburban London, symbolizing his descent into insanity. Pink's hallucination then ceases, and he begs for everything to stop. Tormented with guilt, Pink places himself on trial for showing feelings of an almost human nature before his inner judge orders him to tear down the wall. And the album comes full circle at that point. It goes right back to the beginning. This is a work of art that has been performed for almost half a century. And it's just incredible to me that that is what they are focusing on. Now, you know, Roger Waters is being accused of being anti-Semitic. He may be. It's possible. And the reason I say that is because I don't know. I don't know the guy. You know, I haven't been around. I haven't heard what he actually says behind the scenes. But based on what is being said in the media, I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced at all. Is this the best evidence you have? The fact that he is walking around in a long black coat with a red armband on stage doing the show that he did back in the early 1980s?
Yeah, that's what does it for me. I think that, like, I'm not as familiar with the entirety of the performance. I've never seen one of his live shows. I don't know every detail of all the different forms it took. Like, I believe there's a movie as well. I don't know how the story goes, mm-hmm. necessarily, but that it is referencing stuff he's done before. It seems like whomever booked him for this performance in Berlin maybe ought to have known, like, you know, and checked in, like, hey, this is, by the way, going to be the the art that is that we're paying him to be here and perform.
Well,
it's not like he just started it like this year. He got this great idea for a concept.
The fact that they're actually referring this to police for a performance that is not even a new performance. Now, during this performance, there are some new aspects to it, and we're going to get into that.
Oh.
He also compared the death of Anne Frank during the Holocaust for being a Jew to the death of Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akla for being a Palestinian. Even though the latter died because she was accidentally caught in the crossfire when IDF was in a counterterrorism raid in Israel. And this comes from a website called the Israel Hayom Newsletter.
Yeah, I don't know. That characterization, I think, is still up in the air.
Yeah.
IDF did the investigation.
Now, okay. And I just want to read what Israeli Diaspora Affairs Minister Amichai Shikli said about this. Roger Waters is one of the world's worst Jew haters and Holocaust deniers. I've seen nothing to indicate he's a Holocaust denier, so please show your work
and
there.
How familiar are they with the world?
Look at this sickening background from his concert last night in Berlin. Anne Frank and 6 million Jews cannot answer you. But no, Roger Waters, you are an absolute disgrace to humanity. And this is for showing the name Anne Frank, which is a name every school child should know. But apparently by memorializing her, that's an insult. No, actually, the insult is the fact that he parallels her unconscionable death with what happened to Shireen Abu Akla. And they try to minimize the reporter's death by saying that she died accidentally in a...
They shot her in the head.
In a hail of bullets.
They shot her in the head.
You know the facts, Kyle.
A
you know
sniper.
The facts. Our listeners might not know the facts, so let me read you some of the facts. Okay, this is from a news story a year ago when this happened, from Al Jazeera, which, you know, you might have a preconceived notions about them. Try watching them. They have live feeds. I think it's on YouTube. Watch them for a day. Tell me what you think after you see how they cover the news, because I think you'll be surprised. We don't get it in this country. There is no cable or satellite operator that I know of with the courage to carry Al Jazeera, but most countries, including Canada, do. Anyway, Israeli forces have shot dead Al Jazeera's journalist, Shireen Abu Akla, in the occupied West Bank, according to witnesses and the Palestinian Health Ministry. Abu Akla, a longtime TV correspondent, was killed while covering Israeli army raids in the city of Jenin in the northern occupied West Bank. She was wearing a press vest, was standing with other journalists when she was killed. As you said, Kyle, she was shot in the head. And her fellow journalists, one of whom is named Shaha Hanasa, was standing next to her. She told Al Jazeera there had been no confrontations between Palestinian fighters and the Israeli army. She said the group of journalists had been directly targeted. The first bullet hit me, and the second bullet hit Shireen, said another journalist. There was no Palestinian military resistance at all at the scene. Hanasha said, we were four journalists. We were all wearing vests, all wearing helmets. The Israeli occupation army did not stop firing even after she collapsed. I couldn't even extend my arm to pull her because of the shots being fired. The army was adamant on shooting to kill. And, well, what has happened in the year since, Al Jazeera is demanding answers. And Israel basically said, no. We're not going to do anything about this. We are not going to even have the soldiers be questioned. And here's a big middle finger for you. And that is how they operate. And that is why people are angry. And that is why you have movements like BDS that emerge that target what Israel is doing to human beings. And to call that anti-Semitic, to say... criticizing that kind of treatment is anti-Semitic? No, it is certainly not. So when I see people coming up with these condemnations of someone like Roger Waters, using that as the evidence, the fact that he dares to parallel a reporter who was basically executed with a young girl who died in the Holocaust, I see parallels. I see innocent people that should never have been subjected to this kind of thing. And it's particularly tragic when people think that this represents the Jewish people. That is anti-Semitic. And that anti-Semitism goes to people like Lee Zeldin, to people like Donald Trump, to people like the Republican Party, and the Democratic Party too. Because they are almost as blind when it comes to defending Israel no matter what. European Jewish Congress expressed its disgust, saying Roger Waters' gig in Berlin, is there anything more anti-Semitic than using Anne Frank as a prop on a German stage while prancing around in a Nazi uniform attacking Jews? Well, yeah, there are more anti-Semitic things, and a lot of what is in that sentence did not happen. Did not happen. Wasn't a Nazi uniform, it was a fascist uniform, because in Germany, you're not even allowed to wear a Nazi uniform. And attacking Jews? No, attacking what Israel is doing. Difference. A big difference. I'd like to play you something. I mentioned Lee Zeldin, our former representative here. One of the most hate-filled people that you will ever come across. And he's basically, since he ran his ill-fated campaign for governor here and lost, he basically stepped away from being a congressman. He's still in the background. And his latest thing is to attack anyone who is criticizing Israel in any way. His latest target is a commencement speaker at the City University of New York. I want to read you what he said in this tweet, and hopefully I can play this clip without screwing things up too badly. Raging anti-Semitism has fully consumed the City University of New York. I'll bet you didn't know that. Until the administration is overhauled and all Jewish students and faculty are welcome again, taxpayer funding must be immediately halted. And here is the 3-minute clip that inspired that.
In this moment, of celebrating who we are, I want to celebrate CUNY Law as one of the few, if not the only law school, to make a public statement defending the right of its students to organize and speak out against Israeli settler colonialism. That this is the law school that passed and endorsed BDS on a student and faculty level, recognizing that absent a critical imperialism settler colonialism lens, our work and this school's mission statement is void of value. That as Israel continues to indiscriminately rain bullets and bombs on worshippers, murdering the old, the young, attacking even funerals and graveyards, as it encourages lynch mobs to target Palestinian homes and businesses, as it imprisons its children, as it continues its project of settler colonialism, expelling Palestinians from their homes, carrying the ongoing Nakba, that our silence is no longer acceptable. We are the student body and faculty that fought back when investor-focused admin attempted to cross the BDS picket line, saying loud and clear that Palestine can no longer be the exception to our pursuit of justice, that our morality will not be purchased by investors. We are the class. We are the class that fought for incarcerated clients and zealously filed for their clemency applications with nearly zero institutional support. We are the class that fought for clients to get asylum, that went to court to reunite families torn apart by ACS and the family surveillance. We are the class that organized against using Lexis, a legal research company contracted with ICE. And we did all of this in spite of the racism, in spite of the selective activism, the self-serving interests of CUNY Central, an institution that continues to fail us, that continues to train and cooperate with the fascist NYPD, the military, that continues to train IDF soldiers to carry out that same violence globally, a larger institution committed to its donors, not to its students.
Well, Kyle, did you hear any anti-Semitism in that?
Not explicitly. I heard some pretty strong critiques of that, and basically...
I heard critiques of Israel. I heard critiques of the NYPD. I heard critiques of even the school that she was speaking at. But I sure as hell did not hear any anti-Semitism. I heard someone who was idealistic, criticizing injustice.
Well, I think she was also lauding the school. It was a compliment to what they were able to do in their work and in the spirit of the vocation and their professional studies there.
Lauding the graduates.
Well, right.
The institution, I believe she called fascist, but...
Oh, but there was just that they had allowed the organization and that voice to exist. They didn't try to dissolve it and so forth. And I mean, that was the initial premise of it. But yeah, you're right. There was much more criticism.
Well, Lee Zeldin's remark again: raging anti-Semitism has fully consumed the City University of New York. Until the administration is overhauled and all Jewish students and faculty are welcome again, taxpayer funding must be immediately halted. Okay, so basically, threatening to cut off funds because somebody is critical and has a microphone, and implying that Jewish students are not welcome without providing any evidence that is in any way a reality. Now, I think it didn't help that the speaker's name was Fatima Musa Mohammed, and I think that's probably one of the reasons why everybody has gone after her. It's disgusting to see the widespread condemnation from really, really powerful people. Here's Simcha Eckenstein, a Democratic State Assemblyman representing Brooklyn. This hate-filled and dangerous speech has been brought to you by CUNY and paid for by New York taxpayers. Keep this in mind next time our elected leaders highlight their commitment to fighting anti-Semitism. You are an idiot. I'm sorry. Congressman Richie Torres, a Democrat of New York, said, imagine being so crazed by hatred for Israel in a Jewish state, as a Jewish state, that you make it the subject of your commencement speech at a law school graduation. Anti-Israel derangement syndrome at work. I gave the commencement address at Stony Brook, and I criticized a lot of things that were going on, because that's what you do. When you have a microphone, you speak out. You speak out against injustice, and it's a responsibility. And what she said... less factual. During her speech, Mohammed accused the school of having self-serving interests and said it continues to fail us, continues to train and cooperate with the fascist NYPD, the military, continues to train Israeli soldiers, she used the acronym, to carry out that violence globally. She also called the U.S. legal system a manifestation of white supremacy that continues to oppress and suppress people in this nation and around the world. Now, it's interesting, that line, I think, is harsher. But that really wasn't focused on by Lee Zeldin or really any of the politicians.
Right. She's not being, considered anti-American or somehow unpatriotic. Like, none of that's being called into question because maybe it would be too intellectual of a professional studies, because you could actually have a legal argument or a debate around that critique, which is perfectly valid, especially coming from like a human rights or defending civilian, you know, people in within the strictures of the judicial system, globally or in state, wherever it is,
yeah,
that may be.
Yeah, I've only focused on the Democratic responses. Plenty of Republican ones as well, but I just wanted to do that to show how people are blinded by this hatred, and I'm talking about the hatred of the reaction to the critiques that she brought up in her speech, which takes courage to do. You could tell by the cheers that there is support for people exposing this kind of thing. And there is certainly so much evidence that we can point to in the news, in journalists who risk their lives to uncover these things, where nearly a million settlers now live illegally in places that were occupied by Palestinians, just kicked out, houses destroyed, moving people in against international law that Israel does not respect. And we're supposed to remain quiet about that? No. People need to be speaking out. And if the reaction is to call anybody who speaks out anti-Semitic, that is the epitome of a cheap shot.
Yeah, and it's disingenuous to the awareness that people have of a lot of anti-Semitic activities and speech and so forth that is well documented attacks there are a myriad of those that we could list off and we've reported on.
I've got one, you
but
know.
But that creates the overcompensation, I think, comes from that because people are aware of it, but they are not keeping nuance and understanding the distinctions here and how that is actually sometimes overused in some of these cases. And it is kind of broadly unfair to the facts in how this actually is playing out.
Do you remember Charlottesville, Jews will not replace us?
Uh-huh.
The chant?
Yes.
Lee Zeldin never criticized those people. Those were his friends.
Yeah, there's homies, right?
Proud Boys. And yeah, I know Lee Zeldin is Jewish. Doesn't mean you can't be anti-Semitic. When you tie a group of people, a religion, to a particular military regime and say that all Jews believe this, that is anti-Semitic because all Jews do not believe that. In fact, so many do not. I would say the majority do not. But to try and attach them to something that is so unjust, that is it's despicable. I want to read something rather controversial, maybe. Are all Jews Zionists? Zionism is about the pursuit of an independent Jewish state. The word is derived from Zion, a hill near the city of Jerusalem, but nowhere near all Jews live in Israel, and not all inhabitants of Israel are Jewish. For centuries, Jews have lived all over the world. Almost every country has its own Jewish minority. Two countries have a large Jewish community, Israel and the United States, both around 6 million people. But out of a population of more than 300 million, the 6 million Jews in the United States are but a small minority. In Israel, on the other hand, almost 80% of the population is Jewish. The State of Israel was founded after the Second World War in 1948 in the Middle East, in a place where Jews had lived for thousands of years with their Arab neighbors because of their history and religion. Jews have felt a strong connection with the region for generations. Let's get to the difference between Zionist Jews and Israelis. A Zionist is someone who strives for an independent Jewish state. To many religious Jews, Israel is the promised land, but many non-religious Jews, too, value the fact that there is a country where Jews can live in freedom and safety. Nowadays, the word Zionist is often used as a swear word, as a negative label. Many Palestinians and supporters of the Palestinian cause no longer distinguish between the words Jew, Israeli, and Zionist. That is not correct. I agree with that. Most Jews do not live in Israel. Not every inhabitant of Israel is Jewish. There are also many non-Jews living in Israel. And not all Jewish Israelis are settlers who want to conquer more and more Palestinian land. The vast majority of Jews believe that the State of Israel should continue to exist, but many Jews, both living in Israel and elsewhere, are in favor of a Palestinian state alongside Israel as a possible solution to the conflict. To cut a long story short, although many Jews identify with Zionism, there are still many different points of view. That is reason enough not to mix up the words, Jew, Israeli, and Zionist.
Very good reason.
Are you listening, Lee Zeldin? Are you listening, right-wing politicians and Democratic politicians? Don't mix up the words, Jew, Israeli, Zionist. You know where this came from?
No.
The Anne Frank House.
Really?
Yeah. The very people that these Roger Waters condemners are saying are being attacked by him by daring to mention her name. No, I think he gets it. I think he understands who Anne Frank is. I think the Anne Frank House, the museum there, they understand the situation as well. So, yeah, like I said, Roger Waters may, in fact, be a raging anti-Semite. I don't know. There's no way to know that about anybody until you see what they are like. But based on all this outrage I'm seeing in the mass media, it's not compelling evidence. He's putting on a show that has been performed since the early 1980s. He's a longtime critic of Israel, supporter of the BDS movement, which, by the way, learn more about by going to bdsmovement.net. Decide for yourself. And he has continually spoken out against injustice of all sorts. I don't always agree with him. I certainly don't agree with him on Ukraine. He seems to back the Russian version of things more. But just because you don't agree with somebody on one thing does not mean that they are wrong on everything. And I think that's a lesson we all need to learn. But hey, how about we close out the show with the very piece that is at the root of all the controversy as released in 1979, because apparently it took that long for people to get offended by it. Let's hear In the Flesh from side four of the wall and encourage our listeners to write to us. OTW@2600.com with any thoughts they might have.
The future is truly unsettling.
The present is not so calm either. Stay tuned for Finn. We'll see you next week. Good night.
up against the wall.